Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hey everyone, this is Jamie Pauls with the Serotalk Podcast Network. We'd like to apologize for the audio problems encountered in this month's episode of Serospectives, This Month in Tech for March. The internet is the internet, and those things will happen. But there was no way we were going to keep the program from you because there was too much good content there. So, audio problems aside, we trust that you enjoy the next hour of programming.
Hello and welcome to Serospectives, This Month in Technology for March 2014. Some of us are still saying 2013, and the year's a quarter of the way over. Welcome. We're very glad you could join us tonight. We have lots to talk about, and so I'm not going to take up any more of your time, and I'm going to turn this over to our fine host, all the way from the great and maybe still frozen state of Minnesota. Please welcome Steve Sauzin.
Well, thanks very much. It's great to be here for this month in tech for last month, March 2014. An exciting month. I see I even got the year right. We're doing great. And yes, it is actually snowing right now, which is just awesome. April showers brings May flowers. I hope that applies to snow showers. Anyway, let me go ahead and introduce our guests this evening, and then we'll go ahead and get right to the topics. There are a number of them, as Lisa mentioned earlier. So if you would just give a brief intro of yourself and how people might know you, we'll wrap up with contact details at the end of the program. But we're joined this evening by Rick Harmon. Rick, we'll start with you.
Well, thank you for having me on this evening, and I'm sure most of you know me from the Blind Geek Zone.
Yeah, yes, the Blind Geek Zone. I threatened to make up a bio for Rick. This could be, it would be fun. Maybe I'll do that next time. And we also have Leah Mervin.
Hi, it's good to be here. I think a lot of people know me from the games that I write at l-works.net. And yeah, that's me.
That's how I know you. So that's fantastic. And we also have Shelley.
Hello, I'm Shelley Brisbane, and this is my first time on Serospectives, so thank you so much for having me. People hopefully know me from the book I'm working on about iOS accessibility and also from a lot of writing in the mainstream tech community, primarily for Mac magazines and books and all sorts of other stuff like that.
So can you, this isn't even on the topic list, so tell me you can't if you don't want to, but can you give us more info about the book or
Oh, I'd be happy to do that. The book is, it's called iOS Access for All, and it covers all the accessibility features within iOS. So in addition to voiceover and low vision stuff, all of the accessibility features for folks with motor disabilities and hearing impairments, anything that has to do with accessibility is going to be covered in this book. It's a how-to guide. It's also, to some extent, an evaluation of third-party apps, and I go into a fair bit of detail about how to use all the Apple apps as well, and that's going to come out very shortly.
Well, that's very, very exciting. I know there's been books specifically dealing with voiceover, but not much on low vision, and certainly not much on other assistive technologies that exist in iOS. So, really, really excited. How do we find out when this is released? Of course, Serotalk will probably retweet it, but is there another way we can find
out? I have a website and a Twitter account, both of which are iOS Access Book. So at iosaccessbook.com, and the Twitter is iOS Access Book. And I also, there's a mailing list you can join on the website, but I'm a pretty active tweeter. And I will, anybody who joins the mailing list obviously will get the first announcement. It'll be available in multiple formats, and I can tell you all about that. But if you follow me around on Twitter or on the web, I will make sure you know more than you want to know about this book. It's about 300 pages right now, so I got to move some copies. I don't have the space in my virtual file cabinet.
Well, I'm very, very excited about it. So congratulations on the imminent release. And, well, yes, we'll definitely stay tuned. Let me get back on track before I get in trouble with Lisa here. And speaking of iOS, the first topic we have for you this evening is the new iOS 7.1 and the accessibility changes. iOS 7.1 was released last month, and there are some accessibility changes. I think one of the favorite changes, at least for VoiceOver users, is that bug that announced screen locked twice whenever you would lock your screen is fixed. I know that there are some new problems, but people seem to be super jazzed about the fact that it no longer says screen locked twice when you lock your screen. There's also some new contrast settings for folks with low vision. And any other, what other settings have people noticed? And then we'll talk about the infamous Bluetooth bug. But what other improvements have people noticed in 7.1?
Well, the low vision stuff is I guess the biggest thing. I said to somebody else that this is probably the first iOS upgrade where low vision is a major component of the upgrade. So, and just in general, those things have to do with increased contrast and sort of undoing some of the damage that iOS 7 did from a visual point of view for those of us who are low vision in terms of inability to distinguish backgrounds from icons. For example, there's a new feature called button shapes that gives underlines to some buttons, to some links, as well as providing highlighting to the back buttons and that sort of thing. So it's just like a kid in a candy store for those of us who are low vision. It's not perfect, but it is a start, and it's definitely seems that Apple has heard a lot of the issues that people brought up to them after the release of 7.0.
And it's fantastic. I love it that low vision is finally getting some much-needed focus. I mean, Apple has focused so much on VoiceOver, and there are, I think, demographically speaking, more low vision users. So it's great to see some of these changes finally being implemented. And there's also some contrast changes as well, right? Or some transparency changes or something like that?
What was initially an individual toggle that just said increase contrast is now three buttons or three switches, so three toggles, and increase transparency, reduce white point, and darken colors. They're sort of nebulous names, and I think for most people it's a matter of tweaking them to figure out which combination of settings makes things look better for you. The bold text setting has been improved as well, and so finding, for a low vision person, I think finding the right combination of all of those features. And I think you're right to point out that there, whether demographically there are people who call themselves low vision or could be classified as low vision, or just folks who had difficulty with OS 7 or who might be getting older and who might be having visual issues, I think there's a pretty large audience for some of these changes. And again, I'm hopeful that it's only the beginning, because I think the most useful thing will be for Apple to find a way to customize these features, or to make it possible for people to customize these features and hold their settings, whether the settings are saved in iCloud or whether there's some other way to kind of make your iDevice your own in terms of these contrast settings, because I think we're going to have to continue to tweak it given the challenges that iOS 7 created for us.
Well, very awesome. Rick, have you noticed anything new and exciting in 7.1?
No, not really. I mean, you know, of course, the things that everybody's talked about, but not being a low-vision person, I think a lot of the things have changed there. I talked to a person, believe it or not, one day at lunch that's, a normally sighted person, and they said, you know, even they had troubles with iOS 7 and the new color structures. So, you know, it's not even just necessarily the low-vision people. It's some of the sighted, normally sighted as well.
I think everyone has complained about the icons and the sort of the visual aesthetic of iOS 7. I heard complaints initially, and I thought, you know, this is sort of par for the course, right? It's a new system, and it's a new layout, and of course we're going to get some complaints. The thing is, the complaints haven't gone away. People are still, like you said, Rick, sort of across the board are frustrated with the aesthetic of iOS 7. So, yeah, It's interesting, I guess. One more way, it's sort of universally accessible, which is neat. Liam, have you found anything exciting in 7.1?
The biggest thing, I mean, that I've really noticed, and it's not so much an accessibility thing, but, Siri has kind of changed the way that it works with the home button. You can actually hold down the home button, talk, and if you need to dictate something long, you can do that and then let go of it. Also, actually, now that I think about it, on the series screen, double tap, like what they call the magic tap, double tap with two fingers, now will start and stop Siri. That's sort of a big thing.
And then that used to be there, didn't it? Didn't they break that
in
7?
Six, that was there, and then they broke it in initial 7.
Well, I'm glad that's back, because I used to use that all the time. And then,
me too.
Yeah, when it broke, I totally failed everywhere. So that's neat. So you can hold the home button down and then dictate something lengthy to Siri?
Yeah, if you want to say "or" in a noisy environment and you know, there's a lot of noise, you can say what you need to say, and then it knows, and then you're good to go.
Unfortunately,
like, I'll have that on the train.
I saw a bit of a... Oops. You said you have it on the train?
Oh, all the time, like, and I'll be talking, and there's, you know, the train's very noisy, and so Siri is still listening, and it doesn't realize I'm done. So...
Yeah, exactly. How does Siri handle choo-choo? one thing I saw with 7.1 was not all sunshine and roses. People were complaining, wow, my battery life is really going down. And I kind of skeptically thought, oh, here we go again. You know, people are playing with a new iOS and they think it's their battery, and it's not. It's just them playing with a new iOS. Except that the more I used it, the more I found that they were right. And it really does, your battery really does kind of get hit hard. So hopefully that's something that they will fix. I tweeted an article about a week ago. I should find it and put it in the show notes, because it talked about battery life in iOS 7.1, but it was one of the better articles about what you could do to save battery life that I've seen, and I thought I've read them all. For example, they talk about the fact that you can turn off AirDrop. I didn't realize that, and now I do, and it does help a little. You know, a lot of small changes can add up, but that was one of those, like, oh, it's not working as well in 7.1, but at least my screen isn't, or my phone isn't saying screen locked at inappropriate times. And so, you know, I guess I'm thankful that we get the improvements where we can to some extent.
Now, of course, as you mentioned, not all is sunshine and roses. There is a Bluetooth bug for those using Bluetooth keyboards.
Yes.
And initially was sort of proclaimed as the doom of iOS, and now it's people are saying, well, it's annoying and it's difficult, but it's survivable. Anyone want to talk more about the dreaded Bluetooth bug?
Wow. We need, like, cricket sound effects.
I have to be honest, I don't know what the bug is.
It's so what happens is, if you have a Bluetooth keyboard, in 7, they messed it up so that if you hit control, it wouldn't silence speech, and it's supposed to. And so in 7.1, they fixed that, except now if you hit control, it silences speech forever. And the only way to get it back, apparently, is to either toggle your Bluetooth keyboard off and then back on, and it'll reconnect and all will be well. Or if you use control and option and move somewhere, in other words, a voiceover command, and then release it such that you release control first, not option first. In other words, release control while still holding option and then release option, it'll work fine. But if you release option first and then control, it'll stay silenced. And then
my brain hurts.
It's kind of weird and random, and it's taken people kind of a long time to figure out what the pattern is, because
it kind of sounds like rubbing your stomach and patting your head.
And I'm still working on that one. I'm hoping there's an app for that. Have you experienced it, Rick? That particular bug?
I didn't experience it very much at first, but then all of a sudden I started seeing it all the time, and the only way I could work around it was, like you said, turning the Bluetooth keyboard off and on, and then it was okay. You know, the thing about hitting the control key, so now I just try to avoid touching the control key while I'm trying to type something.
Just don't hit control. Hit shift if you want to shut the
speech up. The irony is I just bought a Bluetooth keyboard yesterday.
Yep, quick nav. Well, if you are typing and all of a sudden things go silent, don't worry. Don't panic, I should say. Toggle your keyboard off and back on. It's a known issue. It's not specific to you or your phone or your keyboard. It's affecting everyone that's using VoiceOver. Just toggle your keyboard off and back on, and all will be well. One thing I haven't heard is whether it affects Braille displays with Braille input, so I'm not sure if it does or not. I'm thinking it probably doesn't, as most of them don't have a dedicated control key that one might accidentally tap, and that seems to be the trigger for this, but if anyone knows for sure, I haven't seen any commentary one way or the other on Braille displays use input devices. So hopefully Apple will fix that. That seems to be the biggest problem with it. For anyone who doesn't know or who might be new to the iOS world, 7.1 is a free update, and you can get it from Software Update located within, where is it now, Settings General. There is a book also from NBP, Getting Started with iOS 7 and iOS, an Introduction for Blind Users, and as the title implies, it's specific for VoiceOver and sort of VoiceOver-centric, but it is a book available, and Lisa has the link, which will appear on your screens momentarily, and of course, as we heard earlier, we have Shelley's book coming out soon.
You know, I would really recommend, if you've not gotten one of these books, that you consider doing so. I am a fairly avid iPhone user, and I've taught plenty of other people how to use their iPhones. But a good comprehensive reference is worth its weight in gold, because you can't possibly know everything, and to have that reference is really good. I've talked to numerous people who've said, you know, I read that book 3 times, and each time, you know, I have more knowledge, so each time I read it, I gained more information, more understanding.
This book is a follow-on to books of there was an iOS 5 version of this book, and then there was an iOS 6 update to it. And so I looked at the table of contents, and it looks like it's probably an iOS 7 updated version. And having read the two previous versions, I can absolutely recommend this book. It's really good. And I think obviously there's a lot of, you know, it's all from the point of view of the VoiceOver user. And, you know, one of the struggles, it wasn't really a struggle, but one of the issues I had when I was writing mine was to figure out, well, you know, when am I addressing a VoiceOver user? When am I addressing somebody who's using the iOS device in a different way? And this book is really clear. It's really well put together. It's organized well. And it also, you never have to sort of translate mentally from, I'm using an iOS device with VoiceOver, but the book is talking to me as if I'm not. And so that sounds like a really simple thing, but it makes it, especially if you have a learning curve, if you're somebody who's new to iOS and you're a VoiceOver user, it's really an easy and fun way to learn.
Very exciting. I did see the previous version of the book, and so I'm glad it's sort of a continuation of it, because like you said, it's extremely well organized and super, super helpful. You know, Lisa, you're absolutely right, and I think oftentimes you read a book like this, and even if you think you do know everything, sometimes it's learning a new way of doing something, a different perspective. I use my iPhone in a certain way, and I perform tasks in a certain way, and I use a certain set of apps to get stuff done, and that doesn't make it right. It works for me, but it doesn't mean it's the only way or even the best way for someone else. And sometimes it's fascinating to me. I'll meet someone or talk to someone or read a book or a blog post and have a totally new idea of how to do something I'm already doing. And maybe it's something I've been doing since the very beginning, but now there's a new way of doing it, or someone's using an app in a way that's different than the way I've used that same app. And I think, wow, you know, maybe I need to rethink how I'm doing stuff. And that's the amazing thing, I think, with iOS. There's so many different ways to do the same thing. None of them are wrong or necessarily better than any other. It's just different approaches that might mesh with different working styles or different people or, you know, how thought processes works, that sort of stuff. So it's absolutely fascinating stuff. There is a lot of announcements last month because CSUN happened. And for those who don't know about CSUN, it's the ginormous tech conference. Well, it's a disability technology focus conference. There's a lot that goes on at CSUN. It's hard to really describe CSUN in 30 seconds or less, but it's a huge conference, and a lot of technology is demonstrated. A lot of it's debuted. There's a lot of other stuff that goes on as well, but CSUN is the conference at which you hear a lot of stuff being announced or revealed and that sort of thing. And so there's a lot of announcements that have come out over the past month, and one of these announcements is the Sendero GPS 2014 products. And anyone have more info about this or is excited about this?
The one thing I own, the PC. What is it? Wow. You know, it's so good. I can't remember its name.
The PC one. Yeah.
There it is. Yep. And I love it. I love using it to plan routes. It is really nice, and the new version I know has updated points of interest, which I have enjoyed. Doesn't have everything in this area, but the nice thing is I believe you can suggest points of interest, so I can go through and suggest, like, my favorite burger place is missing.
Now that is terrible. I hate it when a good burger place is missing. That's... Can you pull on the PC one? Can you pull it from different sources? The iOS thing you can't now.
No, I think it only pulls from the one source. And I know they just updated Seeing Eye, and I believe they changed the point of interest provider, but I'm not sure.
Well, they changed slash
change log.
Yeah, they changed slash added it. Now you can. You can pull from either TomTom or from Foursquare. So the Foursquare one is kind of neat because that's user-driven. So there's your favorite burger place is likely there. So you can pull from either one. Unfortunately, it doesn't aggregate the two. You have to choose one or the other. But it's just it's easy to switch back and forth.
The thing about Foursquare is, yeah, my favorite burger place is there, but so is somebody's loft apartment. So it is kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, that's kind of a problem. But yeah, I mean, a lot of options between the two of those. It's pretty neat. So yes, all kinds of new stuff happening from Sendero. Any other thoughts on Sendero stuff before we go to the next story? I'm not sure. Rick, do you use them? Shelley?
I use the Sendero Seeing iGPS app, but I haven't had a chance to look at the new version.
I got a chance to talk to Sendero at CSUN, and it was interesting because they were put in a position where they had to change providers, map providers, and Foursquare continues, but TomTom is new, and they had been using MapQuest previously. And I really learned a lot about was software development and partnerships, and unfortunately, sometimes when there are issues with things like, well, you know, this point of interest being there and not being there, Sendero has less control over that than we would like, obviously, because they're getting it from other sources. And so not having used the update yet, I'll be interested to see how they're changing the map provider affects people's experience with it or not. And I don't know. I have no opinion on it. I just know that that's happened recently. So it's something to look out for.
Yeah, and it's hard to say. I've been playing around with it a little bit, but I mean, most of the providers I had before, so I don't notice a difference, at least in my immediate area. What is neat though is that you can switch back and forth between them pretty easily. So you can pull up a list of POIs using one and then pull up a list of POIs using the other, obviously many of them will be duplicates, but you can see pretty quickly which ones are new or are listed in one provider but not the other one. And that's kind of neat, because this way you can figure out, if you're in a new area especially, this one is listing more restaurants and I want to eat something, so I'm going to use this provider. But the other one listed more parks or something, you can kind of switch back and forth. So it's neat that you can pull from the different sources.
I was up in Kalamazoo last Saturday, and I actually used it for navigating around, and actually it was very, very helpful. It really made my life being in a strange city a lot easier.
Yeah, it's definitely really, really neat. Well, we have some sad news. SoloDX is closing their doors, and SoloDX is another one of these things. It's hard to describe briefly because it's such a neat concept, and it is a shame that it's closing down. But essentially, before I go into it, does anyone want to describe SoloDX? All right. Go ahead.
I think I got you. SoloDX, the concept was to record descriptive video tracks for movies and TV shows. The catch was that the accompanying audio of the TV show would not be provided, and they would give you cues to sync up to the actual TV show and or movie. And I know they were selling tracks on Amazon and iTunes. And I use them a little bit. I mean, they didn't really do any shows that I was too interested in, unfortunately. But I'm so picky when it comes to TV that that's not really a surprise. It was a neat concept, but I guess it just didn't get the backing that it needed.
Yeah, conceptually, I loved it. I wish they had more variety, but of course, for that to happen, they would have needed, lots of other things to fall into place. But yeah, the idea that it would sync the descriptions with the television audio or audio of the program is kind of neat. And it's maybe just ahead of its time. I don't know, because conceptually, it was a really cool idea.
Well, it's such a good idea for movies, because now in typical audio description environment, you've got to go and get the first find a movie theater that has audio description, and then you have to go get the hardware once you get to the theater. And last time I did that, there was a mismatch between the volume of what I was hearing in my headphones and the really loud movie I was watching. But this is such a great idea, because with an iPhone, with an app, you could have the track all ready for you when you go in the theater. All you do is you plug your headphones into your device. You don't have to interact with anybody in the theater who may not know what you're talking about. It may be too broad a point to make, but anyway, that this is one of these instances where a lot of people become upset when a service costs money. And this service, they had the movie Philomena was available where you could just, go in, and that didn't cost anything. But I think they, as you mentioned, they had paid tracks available. But this is, the community has to support it. It's a great concept. The app was really well designed, and I think it would have been really terrific. But you have two problems. The first problem is, how many people does a service like this need in order to continue to survive? And number two, how willing are we to pay what it's going to cost? And so I hope something like this eventually occurs. Maybe their technology can be picked up by someone else. I don't know a lot about the underpinnings of what they did, but it's a great idea. And it's one of those ideas, like I say, where you have the opportunity to just make something happen for yourself in accessibility terms and not have to depend on people who are less informed than you are about accessibility when you go out to a movie theater or when you watch a television program, maybe at your friend's house or even your own house. So I'm sorry to see it go, but I hope something will come to replace it, or that their technology will find its way into some other provider's product.
I do too. The other thing is that not all theaters have the audio description, and I know around me there's a theater that's kind of far away that has it. But it'd be nice to go to the theater closer to my house if but they don't have it. They do have the movies, but not the description. So this, with the app, you could go theoretically anyway, to any theater, as long as it had the same movie, and kind of bring your own description, BYOD. So, I mean, conceptually, a lot of freedom, a lot of independence that this could have really offered. So, a shame it's going away, but yes, I do hope it's going to resurface in some way, shape, or form. Speaking of CSUN, the Tech Doctor podcast, which Dr. Robert Carter produces with Allison, is a URL that's coming up. And there's some other podcasts, too, that address all things CSUN. In addition to the Tech Doctor podcast, we also have Blind Bargains, which has recorded a number of audio podcast episodes throughout CSUN, interviewing various companies and people and that sort of stuff. I confess I have not had a chance to listen to all of the audio, but what I have listened to is really, really good. All kinds of information, so if you are curious. One interview I listened to recently was an interview they had done with Intuit, and they have an initiative going on. Intuit makes QuickBooks and Quicken and TurboTax and all that stuff, and there's a major initiative underway to make QuickBooks accessible, and so they had an interview with that, and that's just one of the audio things that they did. So there's a whole bunch of podcasts happening around CSUN or discussing various things that happened at CSUN. Anyone listen or excited about any of the podcasts they heard that might want to recommend to other folks?
The one that really caught my attention, well, there were two different podcasting sources. The one that really caught my attention was the NosillaCast, because this is a, for those of you who are not familiar, it is hosted by Allison Sheridan. That looks perfectly fine in print, and when I go to say her name, I feel like there are too many syllables, but that is correct. I want to shorten it somehow. But she is a sighted person. Her mother recently passed away, but her mother was low vision. And Allison, I don't know if she got interested because of her mother. She strikes me as seeming like one of these people who's just interested in a whole lot of everything. But she came to CSUN and interviewed some exhibitors. And she also sat down for lunch with Dr. Robert Carter and his wife and Allison Hartley and somebody named Shelley Brisman, apparently.
I have a vague memory of that, yes.
Where have I heard that name?
No, it was Allison has...
Allison strikes me as very down-to-earth and very informed and just a fun person to hang out with.
Yeah, Allison's podcast, NosillaCast, is a quote-unquote mainstream Mac podcast, and she has been interested in accessibility, and this is not her first trip to CSUN either. She was there last year, and she usually makes a run through the exhibit hall, and I was teasing her gently about, I said, you know, there's these great sessions upstairs, and once you get up there, you'll get lost in the awesomeness, but things in the exhibit hall as well, and so she does a pretty good job of... She does this at Macworld, too, so you'll hear her other podcasts where she goes and talks to people who have really cool technology in the mainstream. So she and her husband, Steve, do video podcasts, and they're quite good at it. Allison is very curious, and she and I had a long talk about the low-vision stuff in iOS 7. I got to give her a live demo at lunch. So there's nothing like a live demo to take something off the page and make it more real, because she could see how I use my iPhone and how and when I turn invert colors on and off, and how bold text affects the way it looks, and I think she got it. So that was a lot of fun.
Well, very awesome. I'll have to check that out and give it a listen. Yeah, that sounds neat, and I'm jealous that she gets to go to Macworld.
I want
to do that. I just want to travel to all these conferences.
Yeah.
I want to do that as a job.
I get to be jealous of a lot of people. I know some other people who went to CSUN as a job, and that was Joe Steinkamp and Ricky Enger from Cerotech. And we have tons of CSUN coverage. Our CSUN coverage was sponsored by HIMSS, and I will be showing the links for that in just a moment. But we have quite a lot of CSUN coverage, everything from exhibitor interviews to presentations. There's a little bit of something for everyone. And if you start now, chances are you'll be able to listen to all of the CSUN coverage done by Serotech and HIMSS just in time for CSUN 2015, I think. But there's quite a lot there, and we hope you will take advantage of that. While we are talking Serotech, I just want to take this chance to make you aware of another opportunity right after Serospectives this evening. If you are with us live, we often meet in the SAMNet tech chat room after Serospectives, but tonight in Game Room 1, Joe Steinkamp is hosting an event with Quasi Mensa, and Quasi is the developer of two games for iOS and now Android. He is the developer of Stem Stumper and Spell Stack. Too much alliteration to wrap my mind around, but Quasi has done a fantastic job, and we hope that if you have a SAMNet membership or a free 2-week trial, that you will join us for that. And you can also sign up to win promo codes for the games to run either on your iOS or your Android device. So we would love for you to take advantage of those opportunities and to join us after this in the game room.
Well, fantastic. And what a talented developer. Those are some great games. They're too complicated for me, but they are great games. If you are wanting a quick jump on all of the audio at CSUN, there is a great big list of everything, sort of. This is a resource that is the resource of resources. It's like the great big book of everything. And then this is, if you're in the mood for a light read, this is the thing to read. It's got presenters can submit resources, and anyone can submit resources, and they sort of gather all this stuff up into this mega resource of resources. It's very resourceful. Anyway, that link Lisa has in just a second, but it's the great big list from the CSUN 2014 conference. You know, I wonder if, I haven't looked, I wonder if these are archived. It would be fun in about 10 years to pull up the great big list of CSUN 2014 conference and look at the technologies that right now we're all sort of excited about, and they're technologies that inevitably will be, you know, so like old-fashioned in 10 years, but It'll be fun to look back. I should see if there's a way to save a copy of this.
The lists are archived. I know, because when I was looking at the list right in the middle of CSUN, I was reading down the list, and I thought, that doesn't look right. And I was looking at last year's list.
Aha. Well, see, or you're just really, really psychic, and you knew everything that was going to happen.
Sure, I'll go with that.
On the list. let's see. The next... Lisa, did you have anything else to talk about the HIMSS CSUN coverage with Serotech, or are we
all set on that? There's lots of really fascinating stuff. A couple joint presentations, some good coverage about EBOT, which is the first thing I've ever heard that described that kind of made me wish I had low vision. You know, I'd be interested if we went around, and if you have something great, don't, that's fine too. but something that stuck out in your mind as being kind of a big deal at CSUN, whether you were there or whether you were reading about the developments or listening to audio from home. If we could just go around and get a one or two sentence, you know, my favorite thing at CSUN was, it was probably getting to sleep after it was over, but other than that.
Let's go ahead and start with, we'll pick on Rick.
All right, well, I'll be honest, I haven't followed CSUN as closely this year as I have in years in the past, but one of the things I did notice was the Intuit QuickBooks accessibility, and I think that really is probably one of the bigger things I saw this year.
I'm definitely excited about that one. It's great that they're finally getting some accessibility focus, and hopefully it'll expand beyond QuickBooks and eventually make its way to other product lines that Intuit makes. They make a ton of stuff, so great. Liam, are you excited about any CSUN stuff?
I'm going to use big technical terms, okay? Are you ready? I'm really excited about that one tablet thingy they were showing off that will let you feel stuff.
Yeah, that thing.
I don't even know what its name is anymore. Guy from Canada is working on it. The touch and tell or the no, that's an old toy. the CNC. I don't.
That's what it
what
should
was
be
it?
Called?
Tactiles? Is that it?
That was it. You know what? That was exactly it. That sounded.
That's like
really
the Lego
neat.
Looking things for Braille. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, it's supposed to let you see, isn't it supposed to let you see objects?
Yeah, you can do objects with it.
It almost sounds like the thing I've heard of where it was like a tablet and you could put a raised graphic on it. Like they had a model of the ear, and as you touched different parts, it told you what it was.
And actually, I think Allison on the NoSilicast did one of her little standalone interviews with those folks, and it's either on her site as standalone or it's wrapped into one of her longer podcasts, but you might check out the NoSilicast to find
they're
out.
They're very active on Twitter, and they have some really cool ideas, and I hope that can get going, because I was talking to a friend of mine who is really up on things in Japan, and there's a monitor that's like this, but it's really rare and it's expensive, but it actually would let you draw and do things of that nature. So I'm really hoping that the, Tactilus, I'm hoping that they get something going. I imagine it probably the cheapest thing, but it could do a lot. It could open a lot of doors.
It definitely could, especially for students that need to feel graphs and things like that, or, like the model of the ear, which is what they demoed, and some other stuff. Just the idea that you can download and touch these objects is so amazing. It's kind of hard for me to wrap my mind around it, just because it's such a cool science fiction like concept, and it's not anymore. It's an actual real thing, and that's what's neat about CSUN, is some of this crazy innovative stuff that's just like, you look at it and you think, oh my gosh, this is actually real. It's here, you know. So yeah, hopefully it'll fall in price and become popular, and you know, who knows where that technology might lead. I think for me, I was excited about the HIMSS new book reader thingy called the Blaze. It is a book reader, and it has a lot of features, but it reads, you know, Daisy books and things like that. Similar to the BookSense in terms of that functionality, but the one big difference is that it also has a camera, and you can use it to take a picture and read documents, printed documents. So if you need to read a page or piece of mail or menu or whatever you might have in print, you can whip this thing out of your pocket, turn it on, and you use basically like an elbow distance from the thing to set the right focus. Push a button, it will take the picture, it will do its recognition, and it will start reading it to you. And it was really amazing to me to see this in action. Because it's a standalone product. So, you know, for people who want to have a separate device for all things reading, including now print, this might be great. Or for people that are a little bit daunted by the iPhone or other technologies and whatever, this is a simple push the button and it'll do the rest. I think this is going to be interesting. I'm curious how well it'll work with more complicated layouts of things. I did read a restaurant menu with it, and that was really impressive. And I mean, it wasn't 100% perfect, but given that I had, you know, 45 seconds of training and the lighting probably wasn't great, you know, and my focus probably wasn't exactly right, the fact that I could tell anything that was on the menu was really impressive. So I'm excited about that. It's supposed to be released, I think, May, end of April or May, soon, anyway. And the pricing is to be announced. But that's a neat technology. So if you're looking for an OCR, pocket OCR solution, that one was really exciting to me.
It was very small. I liken it to if you ever had an iPod Classic, about that size and maybe a little thicker, but definitely extremely portable.
It was, yeah, very, very portable. And that's a great analogy. I was thinking sort of like the PlexTalk Pocket or something like that, but the iPod Classic is I think, exactly the size that it is. It's very, very small. You could easily carry it around. And it's just easy to use. It's the type of thing you could use while on the go and not, you know, have to deal with, you know, whether you have an internet connection or do you have the latest version of the app or, you know, just push the button and it takes the picture and does its thing. So,
you know, I do have a birthday coming up, if anybody would be so kind.
I do too. It's next year, but you know, it's coming up.
That sounds very, I actually totally forgot about that. I'm so glad you brought that up because I forgot about the Blaze.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people are, I mean, I've seen some of the sort of negative commentary about it, like, you know, why would you get this? I mean, you could do similar stuff with an iOS device and so forth. And that, I mean, there's truth in that, I guess, to a degree, but there's something to be said for having a separate gadget and having it just be easy to use, especially if you're on the go.
It also depends, too, on the camera specifications as well. Because yep. Depending on what it's using, it may beat out what your phone has because it might be a little more fine-tuned for scanning.
For scanning,
I'll be curious to see what the pricing is. I think that's going to make the difference for a lot of people. And, I mean, as somebody who, we were talking about battery life earlier, I'm one of these people who I have a phone and I sort of reserve that for things I have to do with my phone, whether it's GPS or actually making some sort of calls. And if I'm listening to a podcast, I have an iPod Touch in the other pocket. I'm kind of weird that way. But I can see if I wanted to read or if I wanted to scan, I might, if I could afford it, I might opt for something like this and leave my phone doing what it does best and not worry so much about my battery being half gone by the time the day was over.
Well, then, and for people that don't want the iPhone, they just, you know, I'm thinking again, folks who just don't want it for whatever reason, or even folks who might be older and want something with actual buttons on it. The buttons are very large. They're very tactile. I mean, they're easy to distinguish. You know, I could see this being very popular with folks who, for whatever reason, don't want to deal with the complexities of an iPhone and all that stuff. So, and you're right, the battery life and everything else, it'll be interesting to see where it's priced. I've heard all kinds of rumors, everything from, I haven't heard anything higher than $795 or $800 was the highest price guess. Of course, you know, it's all guessing at this point, but you know, even at that price range, it's, you know, if the OCR technology works well, I mean, it's in line with other solutions that have existed for sure. So stay tuned to be released end of May, and you can send Liam one or me one, or you can send me Liam's or Rick wants one.
Stood that was going to be our payment for appearing on this fabulous show this evening, that we would all get them in our little goodie bags.
Absolutely.
Lisa will be sending those to you.
Send
this
right out.
Virtual goodie
She'll
bags.
Exactly. So we'll send you a virtual one.
Yeah. Before we go any farther down the hole, we heard from everyone with their CSUN impressions except for Shelley.
What stuck out in your mind as being kind of a notable thing?
Well, I'm going to pick one that actually doesn't have to do with blindness or low vision, because working on my book, I've been looking at things like switch control, which was something that was introduced in OS 7 so that folks can use Bluetooth or a USB-based switch to control an iOS device. And 7.1 sort of brought a little more focus to that, but that feature has been available in 7.0. And I finally got to see an actual switch in use. A company called AbleNet, which is one of the leaders in the switch business, had a demo at CSUN. And what was genius on their part was their demo was Angry Birds. And the way scanning, or it was the switch has two switches. And so you can assign functions to each button on the switch. And you can use the scanning in such a way that you center your selection in the crosshairs, and you can actually shoot the pigs with a switch. And it was kind of amazing is the wrong word, but it was just really sort of illustrative of what you could do. It was sort of much more interesting as a demo than, well, here's how I can select this icon and open this app and all that sort of thing, because you could actually see a real sort of active, fast-moving activity that one could do with an iOS device using switch control. And I was just glad to see that they were there and that they had a really good demo going. And I'm looking forward to seeing where switch control goes and how more people are able to use iOS than have been in the past. So it wasn't like the biggest thing at CSUN, but for me it was pretty cool.
That's really neat. And, you know, for a lot of people, I think that is a big thing. That's another area that hasn't gotten much focus until 7. And, you know, I think that's going to open up an entire world in many cases. So it's going to be neat to see where that heads. Well, we have just a few more topics for you this evening, which is, as we approach the hour mark, Google has dropped its drive storage pricing significantly, putting pressure on Apple to improve iCloud prices. I confess I have not followed this at all. Has anyone looked at this?
I looked at it when I read the story, and I think the first thing to say is that this story that we've linked to does a really good job of comparing Google to iCloud, and it's from a Mac-centric site. And I think the short version is Google is already structurally better for remote storage than iCloud, given all the sort of problems with iCloud, and Google just works. It's like a drive, just the way Dropbox does, except you have access to all the Google apps and stuff. And so I think this article, I'm not a Google Drive user, nor am I likely to purchase anything from them, but I think it certainly ding to Apple in terms of if Apple really wants to promote iCloud as a place to store stuff, iCloud is still a walled garden, and Google Drive is not only not a walled garden, but it's a less expensive unwalled garden.
I really like it. I've recently started using Google Drive, and I was hesitant because Google products always make me nervous in terms of accessibility because they sort of are all over the board. They're getting better, but yeah, you know, they're kind of everywhere, and so I was a bit nervous to try it out, and I was surprised how accessible it really is. There's the web interface, which is, you know, it's somewhat confusing. There's a lot of stuff. It's sort of a busy interface, but there's plugins that you can install on the Mac or the PC, and it just creates a folder, and it's very, like you said, very Dropbox-like. You can put stuff into it, and it'll copy to it, or you can take stuff off of it, and there's context menus where you can share. You can allow people to read and write to the folder or to the file. There's a lot of functionality that's, you know, again, it's doable with Dropbox, but this is a neat alternative, and it's not nearly as inaccessible as I feared it might be. I'm impressed. I definitely could do more with it than I could do, or that I know how to do at least with iCloud. You know, especially on the Windows side. So yeah, Google Drive is a neat solution.
The pricing is awesome.
Yeah, can't beat the price.
I mean, wasn't it like $2? for 100 megs.
Something like that, yeah. It's pretty cheap.
Ridiculously low amount for even a terabyte. Of storage for the Google Drive. It was really low. I can't remember the exact price, but it was ridiculously low. It's going to give, I think, not only iCloud a run for its money, but other services like Dropbox and SkyDrive as well.
I was going to say, yeah, OneDrive is probably going to have to start lowering their stuff too.
And I'm still trying to figure out OneDrive. If you can copy files to it or use it like you can a hard drive, that's the thing with Google Drive, is that you can just copy and paste stuff into it.
In Windows 8, it actually is built into the system and shows up as a folder, and you just drop stuff into it and drag stuff out of it.
That's very cool.
I heard some interesting commentary on that, though, and I will make a long story short, but... And I think this was on a recent Nocilla cast. Allison was sharing the experience of someone who had their internet provider contacted them and just said, you know, just so you know, if we ever have to start cutting back on data, you're using 3 terabytes of data a month. And they were shocked, because to do that, you'd have to stream the equivalent of like 50 movies in a day or some such thing. And basically what happened was he had his Outlook archive stored in the cloud. And so if he wrote a reply to an email message, even just as simple as okay, the whole archive would be uploaded, and it was being re-uploaded each time he sent or deleted an email. So just
wow.
A bit of word of warning about what you do choose to back up in those situations.
Yeah, I remember thinking there was a guy who had used Amazon's S3, which is not the most user-friendly service to use. It's really more for developers. I mean, end users can use it, but it wasn't, I don't think, really intended for that initially. But anyway, he was using an S3-based service, and he put his iTunes library up and could access it from, you know, his work computer, his home computer, all of that stuff. And, of course, there's easier ways to do it today. But I thought, what a neat idea. But would I want to copy and upload all of my... I think it would take forever, maybe not forever, but it would take a serious amount of time. But yeah, I could see people doing that with Google Drive or OneDrive or any of these sorts of things, and then being in a sort of a constant stream mode. Speaking of Amazon, Amazon's Prime has gone up. If you use Amazon Prime, it has now gone from $79 a year to $99 a year. The I want to see what other people think, but the the pervasive thing I've been hearing on Twitter is, who cares? It's just that awesome that it doesn't matter. I don't know. It seems to be kind of a big jump, but people love Prime. I know I use it heavily. I like Prime a lot. And many people are okay with the $20 per year price hike. Anyone have any thoughts on Prime?
I don't use Prime, and I am not, and as many people are, a passionate advocate or a lover of it. I kind of don't get it, because I don't get that much stuff from Amazon that the shipping makes that much sense, and I have other ways to get movies and the like. If people love it and are willing to pay more power to them, I suppose, but for me, it kind of confirms my dislike of it, or my misunderstanding of people's excitement about it. I'm like, okay, fine. If you want to pay $20 more, be my guest.
I love Prime.
I hear about it a lot is people who live in semi-rural or not really suburban areas, where going to get something from the store is going to be a $10 or $15 cab ride each way. And for them, I think Prime really pays for itself.
It can. I got a trial of it one time for Christmas because I had ordered a TV for the family, and the shipping was going to be some outrageous amount, or I could sign up for 30 days of free Prime and get free shipping, and I could have it tomorrow. And I thought, well, of course I will tomorrow, even if I'm not going to open it till next week. So I did it, and the caveat is if you don't cancel before the end of the trial, they bill you for it. And that was a couple of years ago, and they've continued billing me for it. I think it's great for people that want near instant gratification, at least on the shipping stuff. I love the idea that I can have stuff tomorrow, and it's only after I place the order that I realize, you know, do I need to have this thing tomorrow? Could I have not waited, you know, 3 days or something for this thing? And usually the answer is yes.
$20 increase is that bad when you stop to consider that when they launched it in 2005, it stayed the same price for 9 years. And, you know, this is even with shipping costs and gasoline costs going up. So I actually think it's pretty reasonable because originally there was a lot of talk that they'd go up by 40 and not 20. So.
Yeah, it's definitely. No, go ahead, Rick.
Oh, I was going to say, I agree. I just started using Prime. This is my first year of Prime. And at first I thought, what? You're going to raise this to $99? But the more I order and the more I see the stuff that I get, the, you know, even something cheap anymore on Amazon costs you $5 or $6 shipping. So it adds up very, very quickly. And I love the $3.99 for
yes.
overnight, no matter what it is.
Yes.
Yeah,
that was great for Christmas, actually. I really took advantage of that to get stuff over to people quick.
I had Prime for a while, and I found it was really helpful for things like, oh, man, you mean I'm out of allergy medicine and my sinuses are about to stage a revolt and it's Monday and I'm not going back to the store till Saturday? Prime was definitely my friend then.
And in some areas, in some larger cities, we have express delivery. Like I know here in Chicago. So literally, I could actually go at 4 o'clock in the morning and go, I want this, and it'll show up later that day.
Yeah, that is instant gratification almost.
That's just magic. I don't even know how that's possible, but yeah. I don't live in such an area. Well, we are just about out of time. We have a few more stories, but I think we... Can we hold this last one, Lisa, to next month?
I think we can.
I think
we
should.
It's in the show notes if you're dying of curiosity, and I will display it anyway, and we can talk more about it, or at that point we may find, oh, it's not as much of a story as we thought it was. But in the interest of time, yeah, I think we're good, and we've pretty much covered things, especially as they relate to access tech. Before we go, though, we'd like to thank our guests for joining us, and we'll let Steve do the honors of having you each go around and giving a bit of contact information where people can follow you on Twitter or find out more about you.
Well, thanks very much. And let's go ahead and round and get that information out if you have contact info or Twitter handles you want to announce that people can follow you or contact you. Or in the case of Shelley, you get to announce your mailing list for the book again, in addition to any other contact info you want. Hashtag bonus. In fact, we'll go ahead and start with you. So, Shelley, thanks for joining us this evening.
It was my pleasure, and thanks for the opportunity to plug. You can find me on Twitter. Just Shelley is my handle, Shelly. Or you can go to iosaccessbook.com, and you can learn about the book. You can sign up for the mailing list. The Twitter handle is also iosaccessbook. I don't really post a lot there. Once the book is out, I think I will. And last but not least, brisbane.net is my website. The most recent thing I wrote up there was something about the folks who were suing Apple about the POS system. So it is all relevant. And thanks again for having me.
Well, thanks very much. Great. And I'm amazed you got at Shelley on Twitter.
Hashtag early adopter.
Story, but it was in 2007. Wow. That's how I did it. And I get a lot of misdirected tweets, but be that as it may.
That's okay. Hang on to that one. I wonder who has at Steve. I should look. Anyway.
Yodeling Steve is still available, you know.
It's too long, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Liam, thanks for joining us.
Oh, yeah. It was good to be here. I'm glad I was here and didn't fall asleep this time.
Well, I'm glad you stayed awake, too. That that says something. And how can people find you, contact you, read more about you?
I am on Twitter at Liam Ervin, LIAMERVEN. You can also go play my wonderful games at l-works.net. And I do have liamervin.com, which is a blog I never update because I am horribly lazy and I get home from work and I don't really want to do anything. But there is some stuff up there. Couple posts and some podcasts and things of that nature, but I am really active on Twitter, so you know, if I mention something on, you know, if there's anything on the show or anything tonight that you'd like to argue with me about, feel free. You know,
well, I too have a blog I don't update very regularly. It was my New Year's resolution to do so, and I might put a post out there soon. So anyway, thanks so much for joining us. And last, but, well, not even last, but not least, but Rick.
Thank you for having me here this evening. It's always a pleasure to join you here. And easiest way to get a hold of me, obviously, is www.blind-geek-zone.net. And if you want to follow me over on Twitter, you can do that too. Blind Geek Zone is where I do all the BGC stuff, and if you want to follow me personally, that's Rickster1963.
Well, fantastic and great having you back as well, as always. I'm Steve Sawson, and I am on Twitter at Steve of Maine, like the state, Steve of M-A-I-N-E. I'm still looking for a new handle because I'm no longer in Maine. But anyway, Steve of Maine is me. And that's the easiest way. I won't give you my last name because it'll take up another hour of your time. So anyway, thanks for joining me, everyone. Thanks to Lisa also for doing a great job monitoring the chat and for putting up the links and keeping me in line and everything else that goes on behind the scenes. Thanks, everyone. Next month for This Month in Tech for April.